Our last case this morning is In Re Guardianship of Kane M. And Mr. Glass, when you're ready to switch gears, we're ready for you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. May it please the court. The nature of this case is an appeal from Boyd County Court. The appellant appeals the order of supplemental order leaving the guardianship in place over Kane, the minor child. The issues tried were whether mother was fit to perform duties imposed by a parent-child relationship, whether the third party should be given guardianship over Kane. The trial court ruled against the presumption that Kane's best interest be served with returning him to his mother's care, custody, and control, though the guardianship should be left in place. My argument is the county court's order continuing guardianship over Kane is not supported by competent evidence, is arbitrary, capricious, and unreasonable. McAllister, the petitioner, the appellee, failed to make a prima facie showing by clear and convincing evidence that Cecilia Greenhouse was either unfit or had forfeited her right of custody of Kane. The court's order was devoid of finding of parental unfitness, which I think is the underlying issue here. Furthermore, the court unconstitutionally failed to uphold Cecilia Greenhouse's superior right or parental preference to child custody. Trial court erred and abused its discretion in determining mother was unfit to perform parental duties. I think the record establishes a judicial bias or prejudice as a matter of law.
Was that raised in the lower court?
I don't believe that the attorney had mentioned anything about the comments of the court.
Well, there was no motion to recuse the court?
No. Yeah.
So can we deal with that here when it wasn't dealt with in the lower court?
De novo review, I think so.
What was the prejudicial, or what was the bias of the court?
So, if you recall, the trial court gave McAllister, the petitioner, the applicant, the guardian now, the McAllister's lawyer, verbal encouragement during the trial. During closing McAllister's argument, the trial court made an inappropriate, unexplained interjection. Mr. Orsla, he said, I would object, Judge, that wasn't the testimony. I believe the testimony from my client was in exhibit, the Venmo app. She received $5,600 from somebody over Venmo. Ms. Betcher, I mean, that's even better. And the court said, correct.
Wasn't the record's not real clear who that comment was directed to?
I think you can infer that it was directed towards Miss Greenhouse, that she's unfit because she's an entertainer. I believe the parental preference doctrine provides the court may not properly deprive the biological parent of the custody of the minor child unless it is affirmatively shown that such a parent is unfit to perform duties imposed by the relationship or has forfeited that right.
You started off your argument, if I understood or heard you correctly, that there wasn't a finding of unfitness, but there was, wasn't there?
There was a
finding. And you're saying that was in error.
That's the main issue. I don't think that the Greenhouse's children section, where in the court makes not a single allegation of unfitness of the mother. You have the Greenhouse occupation. Again, the court does not provide a single rationale that mother's occupation causes an incapacity of performance.
Wasn't it the combination of various factual determinations? It's not one factor just in isolation. It was a combination of factors.
One, two, three, four, five, six factors that the court considered, but I don't believe that the court said anything. Well, as it relates to Greenhouse's boyfriend, the court asserts that White would be responsible for the minor child while mother is at work. But that still doesn't show that the mother's unfit.
Well, it can show that she's not using good judgment when she's leaving a 7-year-old or 6-year-old child with somebody who's smoking marijuana all day and night.
And I think that goes to the greenhouse's risk-taking behavior, perhaps.
Does that not go to what may be in the best interests of the child?
But I don't believe it was substantiated with evidence. I mean,
there was all kinds of evidence. We have cell phone shots. We have evidence of speeding cars. We have...
Well, that was Exhibit 3, and I'm saying that that was improperly submitted. But again, though, to that point, I think that the testimony was that... the court fails to take into account that the mother testified that she would change her entire schedule to accommodate this child's schedule if she were to have custody. She would make these changes.
She also said she was going to go to paralegal school and hadn't done that.
But that doesn't substantiate or show that the individual is unfit. I mean, she could be an entertainer. She can have a breast augmentation. And I think the court was relying on those issues. Well, those facts to show that she's unfit, but I don't think that
she had another son who she doesn't have custody of, nor it if I'm recalling correctly, doesn't appear she has a relationship with. She's not had to pay any child support. All she was expected to do was to pay $400 toward transportation costs for this child. She did it once. Failed to do it two other times. But the court is looking at what is in the best interest of this child.
Correct.
And he was with, his grandmother,
right,
who's the guardian, and was providing a stable home here in Nebraska while your client's in California.
Correct.
He seems to be doing well in school, and even at 7 years old, prefers to be where he is and doesn't seem to have much of a desire to go back to California.
I think that both parents and the children in this familial relationship are protected by the U.S. Constitution. You don't have to be an A-plus mom.
There's only one parent right now, and it's your client. The other parent's deceased.
Parents and children. Parents and child.
Okay, I thought you were talking about two parents.
The father did pass away.
Right, he was killed in an automobile accident.
This is not, this isn't the Brady, but they don't have a bunch of money. This is obviously an impoverished family, but you still have a constitutional right to your child, and I think the child has a right to be with the parent.
Unless unfitness is proven.
Unless unfitness.
Okay, so let's talk about the unfitness a little bit more. Does the... Your client testified to a lot of good intentions. But she has a two-year-old daughter in the home who's living under the conditions that have been described here. Was there any evidence that your client had taken any tangible steps towards these good intentions, towards providing a more stable home?
Other than continuing to trying to have a relationship with Kane, I don't know. I know that the record said that mother does have a personal deficiency or incapacity, which would probably prevent this from happening, or probably prevent this performance or parental obligation in child rearing, and probably will result in the detriment of this minor child. But nothing in the record, in my opinion, establishes that the mother has a personal deficiency to accomplish these goals or an incapacity to perform parental obligations or to cause detriment or wealth.
What was the burden of proof here to show unfitness? Was it preponderance?
Clear and convincing.
Clear and convincing? Okay.
And I don't think that they met their burden. I'll reserve my 40 seconds.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, opposing counsel. I'm Ashley Betcher. I'm the counsel for the grandmother, who is the appellee in this case. I want to quickly address one of the assignments of error that appellant made, the judicial bias argument. I think what it comes down to is appellant seems to be arguing that because the judge decided against her because the judge didn't like her actions or behaviors, then therefore he must be biased. And there's case law that says that the outcome, the trial court's outcome, is not a valid basis for suggesting judicial bias.
But there were some comments, not just the result of the decision, but comments by the court that could have been viewed as helpful to your client.
And the one comment specifically that opposing counsel brings up, and I believe Chief Judge Pirtle, you correctly identified that in that circumstance, the judge, trial court judge, was actually talking to the appellant's attorney when he says correct. He's encouraging the other attorney that yes, that's the correct. That's how I remember the testimony. It wasn't made to my client's counsel. And I think that a reasonable person reviewing this record would find that there wasn't a question regarding the judge's impartiality. The evidence supports the outcome in this case.
And do you agree that we can address that even though it wasn't raised below through a motion to recuse or whatnot?
I don't think it's appropriate in this case. But in any event, I just don't think there is evidence of judicial impartiality. I want to spend the majority of my argument regarding the suggestion that there was not sufficient evidence to support the trial court's finding that Mother was unfit. I think that we have a fantastic supplemental order from the trial court that walks through all of the evidence that was offered at trial, starting with the fact that Mother has three children, but only custody of one of those. As you noted, her oldest son, she hasn't had a relationship with for years. And when asked about that, her testimony was essentially, she got tired of dealing with California's Child Protective Services department, and so she just gave him up. She abandoned him. She hasn't seen or talked to him in years. The child in issue today, Kane, was brought to Nebraska in 2020 by his father. My client's testimony was that was because her son realized it was not a good situation for him in California. There was significant drug use, domestic violence, criminal actions, and he wanted to get him out of that environment. And so he brought him back to Boyd County in Spencer, Nebraska, where they lived with my client and her husband. Meanwhile, the appellant continued to live in California. She lives with her 22-year-old boyfriend, who, by her testimony, is unemployed. She works as an exotic dancer. There's suggestions from appellant that somehow the court had a bias against her because of her choice of employment. I don't believe that the record bears that out. I think rather what the trial court found was she made decisions regarding her employment that perhaps were what she wanted to do, but were not in her minor or her children's best interests. She had a job that put her out of the home for most of the night. She worked at a club an hour away from where she lived. So not only was she gone during her work hours, but she was also gone an additional 2 hours just commuting to and from. In addition, she decided it was appropriate to leave this 22-year-old boyfriend with the minor children, even though she testified that he was a daily marijuana user, that he generally smoked marijuana at night, but it was okay because he didn't smoke in the house, which means that he was smoking outside of the house and that the minor children were left unattended at night when they are arguably most vulnerable. Mother also argued that it wasn't a problem because marijuana is legal in the state of California, so it's not an issue. But as the trial court points out, there are things that are legal here in Nebraska, such as drinking. That doesn't make it appropriate for someone that's in control and custody of a minor child to be under the influence of any substances, regardless of whether or not they're legal. I think perhaps the most telling situation, though, is the fact that over the 3 years for now that Kane has lived with his grandmother in Nebraska, Ms. Greenhouse saw her son on two occasions. Both of those occurred over summertime, and both of those occurred only after my client brought Kane to California. According to the decree of paternity and custody, Ms. Greenhouse was awarded parenting time not only in the summer, but also fall break, Christmas break, and spring break every year.
But But would you agree the pandemic occurred and probably had some impact on the ability to visit?
I think that that argument works for potentially 2020, but I think that argument fails in the fact that my client was able to bring the minor child to California and leave the state. So I'm not sure how she can then say she was unable to leave the state to come visit her son during those intervening years. Another argument that she used was that she didn't have the financial resources to make it to Nebraska. But this is when that situation regarding the over $5,000 that she received on that Venmo Cash App, that she then chose to use for elective cosmetic procedures for herself. That's obviously concerning, that we know that she has some financial issues. She's not financially supporting her son. She comes into a significant amount of money, and rather than using that to financially support her child or to try and see her child, she chooses to have these elective procedures. And this occurs during the same time that she's not seeing her child. Additionally, she was granted telephonic visitation or telephonic time with her child. The testimony from my client was she simply didn't use that. My client generally was the one to initiate contact for Kane with his mother, only after going weeks without talking to her, sometimes up to a month and a half. And so again, it's a situation in which when left to Greenhouse, she makes no affirmative action to have any sort of relationship with this child. It's only when my client is making taking the steps necessary so that her grandson can have a continued relationship with his grandmother. I think when opposing counsel talks about the fact that she does have financial issues, but that can't be held against her, I would agree that in a vacuum, when we're talking about finances alone, that would be appropriate to use against her. But I believe the court has talked about the issue with finances in the case of Gomez v. Savage, for example, when the court says if a parent has the ability to make money, has access to money, and then chooses to use it in ways that don't benefit the child, then that's absolutely something that a court can consider when determining whether or not a parent is fit.
And she was not paying any child support. She was not ordered to pay any child support on a monthly basis like a lot of parents would be in this case.
And that's correct. And similar to that same case where the court says just because you aren't ordered to pay child support doesn't mean that you still don't have a responsibility. What she was ordered to do was to provide transportation or arranging that and covering the cost of it. And as you correctly noted, she only covered the cost one time. Otherwise, again, it was up to my client to make that happen. And so I think what it comes down to is that this mother's relationship with her son really only happens when somebody's helping her. Otherwise, she's living her life in California, doing what she wants, doing what she believes is best for her, with very little interest in what's best for her son.
Is it a problem that this court has made a finding of unfitness and yet she has custody of another child that she's caring for?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think we only have this in front of us, and that's all that we can look at. And so I think that it's certainly the court's prerogative to make a determination on a fitness in this situation with the information that we have. And I would just say that in the court's findings in In Re Guardianship of Elizabeth H., the court talks about a history of poor decision-making can be the basis for finding unfitness when awarding custody of a guardianship. And I think that that's exactly what we have right now, is this history of poor decision-making. I think, once again, as I stated, she's making decisions based on what she wants to do. I think the trial court made note that she and her boyfriend are acting more like kids than adults, and that's essentially what's happening. So when we're looking at what's in Kane's best interest, and I believe that we met our burden of finding that mother was unfit by clear and convincing evidence, rebutting that parental preference principle, I think we look at best interest, and I believe that it's in Kane's best interest for this guardianship to remain in place. Thank you.
Thank you. And how much time is remaining?
41 seconds.
I just go back to the point that both parents, or both both parents and children. Now, there's only one parent here. But the parental superior right to child custody protects not only the parent's rights to companionship, care, custody, and management of his or her child, but also protects the child's reciprocal right. I believe that this, as the order keeping in place the guardianship, does not conform, is not supported by competent evidence, arbitrary, capricious, as that the court reversed the judgment of the trial court.
Any further questions?
No.
Thank you. Thank you both for your appearance here today. Your case is submitted and you are excused. Thank you.